Only a few days ago, something happened that was not reported at all in the media, and of which you are completely unaware. 3 Israeli nuclear submarines put to sea. In the first place, millions of Americans do not know the Israelis even have a submarine, diesel or otherwise, and millions of Americans certainly did not know the Israelis have nuclear submarines, nor did they know that they were built in Germany and that the Israelis purchased them from Germany. But Syria knows that Israel has nuclear submarines because Israel quietly warned Syria in secret, because Syria has been exporting Katyusha rockets and also anti-tank rockets to the Hezbollah in southern Lebanon, and the Hezbollah has built 30 new bases, has put 5,000 additional men forward on the lines right with northern Israel. They could walk into Israel at any moment, says some of the people in the Israeli high command of the IDF, because once the Israelis abandoned southern Lebanon, they did not very quickly construct a huge, big, long line of fortifications along the Lebanese border. At the same time, Saddam Hussein has moved more than a division of his Republican Guard and other soldiers nearest the border to Israel, meaning in the western Iraqi desert near Jordan. At the same time, the Israeli IDF has a large number of their soldiers practicing anti-tank warfare down in the Jordan Valley, the other side of Jericho. The reason you don't have any of this in your news is because we've been concerned about dimpled chads. And we've been concerned about 5 weeks of miasma of confusion and court battles and a man whose lust for power led him to dispatch a team of dozens of attorneys and to launch about 54 who knows how many lawsuits in every county and state court in the state of Florida trying to overturn the results of an election. The average American knows almost nothing about what is happening in the Middle East and what is happening in Europe. Now, just the other day, the future king of Great Britain, Prince Charles, has told friends of his that he is very fearful over the development of the new European army, called the New European Defense Force. This from the Daily Mail in England. Charles, who holds many senior military positions and has access to the highest grade classified information, is deeply concerned that that force will undermine the special relationship between Britain and the United States. The prince's privately voiced anxieties are a sensational new development in the row over the euro or the European army. Britain doesn't want it, the United States doesn't want it, but France does, and Germany does. Now think about it if you would. There has been for many years deep suspicion and fear on the part of the French toward Germany, but their new, and this is my phrase, this is my way of viewing it, their new Maginot Line is not a lot of concrete bunkers and fortifications along the line or the border between France and Germany at all. Nor is it up along the border between them and Belgium. But it is the fact that the French are a nuclear power and they think, I don't know if they know any better or not, you think, let me put it that way, that Germany is not. I think we ought to know better because decades ago, clear back in the 1960s, it was revealed that Germany had been working secretly with South Africa on developing nuclear weapons. There have been nuclear reactors, many of them, in Germany for many years and in South Africa. I've actually seen some of those in South Africa. And there was word that they had actually exploded testing nuclear devices in a remote part of the South Atlantic, not far from Antarctica. So that was way back probably 25, 30 years ago. There has been suspicion that Germany joined the atomic club secretly a long time ago, although, of course, the government, if it would ever reveal that, would cause immediate riots all over the place in Germany. They could never let anyone know about it because the last thing in the world Europe would want to know is that Germany is a nuclear power. So the prince's privately voiced anxieties are a sensational new development of the row over the European army. He is concerned that Britain's crucial intelligence links with the Americans could be at risk, jeopardizing the NATO alliance that has kept peace in Europe for half a century. Charles is convinced that Washington simply does not trust the French, and therefore the flow of invaluable intelligence data to Britain will dry up once the force is in place. That disclosure that the heir to the throne has such deep reservations about this European army is a body blow to Tony Blair. The Prime Minister has invested enormous political capital in the creation of that army, which was finally approved by EU leaders at their Nice summit just earlier this month. He drove the project through in the teeth of repeated warnings it could threaten NATO, warnings that he contemptuously dismissed as fundamentally dishonest. Yet it now emerges that the future King of Britain shares these concerns and has voiced these warnings. Senior military sources have confirmed that the Prince believes the Americans will be reluctant to continue making intelligence data available to the UK once the new European army is in force. That would put at risk the historical special relationship between London and Washington, which has served successive post-war governments as well, or so well. Charles is well-versed, and here's why. He is colonial... No, I'm sorry, I mispronounced that. The Prince is Colonel-in-Chief of the Parachute Regiment, which would play a key role in that new force. He's also Colonel-in-Chief of the Royal Regiment of Wales, the Cheshire Regiment, the Army Air Corps, and the Royal Dragoon Guards. He is a Rear Admiral, and all these are all, you know, actually just titles and not actually that he works at that, but he does spend about 10% of his time receiving big boxes of military dossier, top secret, and he is privy to all of that that comes through the various intelligence agencies, not only MI1, MI2, MI5, MI6, but also the United States, CIA, and so on. He is also then Deputy Colonel-in-Chief of the Highlanders, as well as Colonel-in-Chief of a number of the Commonwealth regiments, and because of that, he regards military matters as hugely important and spends a great deal of his time studying them. You've all been through with me before the 22nd chapter of the book of Isaiah and the prophecies about Shebna and how there will be an individual seated on the throne that is David's throne at the time just before the second coming of Christ, who will apparently be doing or saying some things which are really abhorrent in God's sight and will be taken into captivity, hurled like a ball into a wide land. And there he will be in captivity, it says. And the nail that was in the sure place, Eliakim, the son of Hilkiah, the high priest, which is a type of Christ, will actually be replaced by Christ himself. And the final overturning of that throne will take place. You didn't hear any of this in the news in the last week or so, did you? Well, I get from the internet all kinds of news. And I especially will go to WorldNet and to some of the news in Israel. I will go to Israel every few days and look through all of their publications and Reuters and all the others. I get any newspaper in the world. I get the Drudge Report, which is a tremendous source of news, which is a lot of news you will never hear in the mainstream leftist liberal media in this country. And therefore, as the watchman, and I believe that God wants me to function as such, I am both speaking and writing about many of these things. Now, let's just go through a little bit here of a supposition about my father coming out of the grave. If my father, Herbert W. Armstrong, were to be resurrected today, he would be astonished at several things. First and foremost, he would be absolutely astonished at what happened to the worldwide church. He would be astonished that it's taken so long for prophecy to develop so that it is now the year 2000, almost 2001, and the tribulation has not yet begun. He would be astonished that it has taken this long. But he would not be a bit surprised that only 3 years after he died, the Berlin Wall came down. He would not be a bit astonished that Germany has been reunited. He wouldn't be a bit surprised that Europe has united. He wouldn't be a bit surprised about the euro, the common currency in Europe. He wouldn't be a bit surprised about an announcement about the creation of a European army, or that Prince Charles is beginning to voice serious reservations. He would not be a bit surprised about the fact that Israel now possesses nuclear submarines and that another major war is about to break out apparently in the Middle East. He wouldn't be a bit surprised that the Vatican and Israel have been in close negotiations and that the Vatican has suggested that perhaps the holy places in Palestine ought to become like a second Vatican. He would not be a bit surprised about any of that. Nor would he be a bit surprised that his son has staunchly remained true and faithful, uncompromising to the doctrines of the Bible and the church, nor that his son is still preaching that very same message of witness and warning. He wouldn't be a bit surprised about that either. If my father could come back, He would find out that I'm preaching the same gospel he did for more than 50 years of his life. If you will turn to the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, this is something that I think a lot of you know almost like the back of your hand, because it is a prophecy for the end time. It says in verse 40, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him. Now, to rehearse a little bit so that you remember the history. A lesser line of pharaohs called the Ptolemies reigned in Egypt, and a group of kings called the Seleucids or the Seleucidae reigned in Syria. And there were battles back and forth following the death of Alexander. And of course, as the Roman Empire was gradually beginning to develop during that period of time, when Antiochus Epiphanes, and they jokingly called him Imenes, which meant the idiot or the crazy one, and Epiphanes meant the great lustrous one who comes forth and so on, had actually ravaged Palestine. The Ptolemies would, Egypt would advance, and Assyrians would lose, and Assyrians would war, and Egypt would lose. You can read of that in Rawlinson's Five Great Empires and also in Josephus, and the history books are there for you to study together almost verse by verse in Rawlinson's history. Is the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel up to and including the 39th verse in history. But beginning in the 40th verse, it is projecting forward into the time of the end. Now, since Antiochus Epiphanes is the last individual who is identified as this evil person who comes in a time of peace and obtains a kingdom by flatteries, a vile person he is called, and I'll go back and quote that to you, in verse 20, 21, and finish that thought first, since Antiochus is the last individual who is portrayed in this lengthiest of all prophecies in the Bible, and that personality or individual never changes, it progresses right forward to the time of the end and leaves us hanging with Antiochus Epiphanes, the last individual who is identified in prophecy as being the individual mentioned in verses 21 and 22. Reading to verse 20 of chapter 11, then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes. That man is identified in history as Heliodorus. In the glory of his kingdom, but within a few days he shall be destroyed, neither in anger nor in battle. And I believe he was poisoned, but I'm not certain of that, so don't quote me on that. It's in Rawlinson. It's been years since I've read Rawlinson's. In his estate, in his place, shall stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom. Now remember that the Hohenzollern family, that's Kaiser Willy, who was the first cousin of the king in England in World War I, Elizabeth's father and so on, or grandfather, I believe it is, was actually a vile, he was not the vile person, but he was the tax collector. Hohenzollern meant tax collector. When I would go back and forth across the borders in Europe, you'd come to the Swiss border, the German border, it would have the great big word Z-O-L-L or Zollern. It'd be the kiosk or the place where customs or the tax associated with a customs charge when you went across a border was collected. Zoll, and that's what it meant. So Hohenzollern meant the tax house, the tax collecting house. It's fascinating then that that family, like a dynasty in Germany, preceded Adolf Hitler. And in his estate, the Kaiser, shall stand up a vile person to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably, or during a time of peace, as the Bible says, and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. And what did he do but flatter the German people into believing they were pure Aryan and they were the super race? Nordic, blonde, statuesque, powerful, all of them, which is nonsense, of course. Hitler being an Austrian himself, a little Austrian corporal, and strongly suspected of having had some Jewish blood in his veins, which he probably hated, and he was anything but tall and blonde. He was dark with a muddy complexion and had a physical debility that I won't discuss. Verse 22, it goes on to talk about the history, and I won't go through that with you, but I just wanted to remind you that once Antiochus Epiphanes is identified, now we come forward to a little type or a fulfillment of that in typical fashion during World War I and World War II of the Hohenzollerns and Adolf Hitler, and wonder whether or not that is a shadowy or a typical fulfillment of it. Now in verse 40, at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots, with horsemen, with many ships. He shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom. Edom is Esau, and Esau is Turkey. And Turkey and that area would be called, in a sense, the king of the north. Where is Syria? Well, it's just in the eastern part of the Anatolian Peninsula, and just directly north and a little bit east of Israel, and shares a portion of the end of those mountainous areas there on the Anatolian Peninsula with the land of Turkey. So you cannot have a completely confusing description here of saying that people today should look back to the old pattern of history and to say that Syria is going to attack and enter and destroy Egypt. It makes no sense at all. Why? Well, because Egypt is Islamic and Arabic. Those are not Egyptians, because no original Egyptian lives in Egypt anymore. They are Arabs. The Egyptians long since disappeared. And the Syrians and the Egyptian Arabs are brothers and cousins. They're the same religion. They're the same appearance. They're the same people. They love one another. They're among the Arab brothers. So it would make no sense to speculate that that would be the nation that would fulfill this prophecy. Nor does it make any sense whatsoever to think that the beast power is some kind of an Islamic country. We had a minister in a very high position in the CGI years ago who came up with the idea because he found out that some little tribe of the Kurds still insist on calling themselves as if they were modern-day people of the ancient land of Nineveh and are Assyrians. And because they live in the area of ancient Assyria, part of it, they call themselves Assyrians. And they are not, because actually those people migrated up into Europe and have been identified very clearly. And of course, that's all in my book on the United States and, or Europe and the United States, Europe and America, in prophecy. And by the way, I just ordered a reprinting of 10,000 copies of that book. It's going to cost us about $1.12 per copy. That's the printing cost. It's being done, being jobbed out over in Dallas. It will have a color cover. And we're just out of those, and that's a very important tool for the work, so we want to replenish that stock. I'm not sure that I can send that out as a letter and offer it to the entire mailing list, but I want it there to be able to offer to back up many of my television programs that have to do with current affairs and with biblical prophecy. So remember that at all times, in all cases, in all places in history, the Roman Empire, which became the so-called Holy Roman Empire, was a, quote, Christian, end quote, empire. It was not an Islamic empire. When did Islam first come along? 600 years after Christ. 600 long years after Christ. Over 300 years after the Council of Nicaea. So long after all those other events that are simply, you just cannot believe that anyone would come up with the idea that Saddam Hussein is the king of the north. But I've had that proposed to me. They just don't know their history. They don't know the biblical prophecy. Don't know what they're talking about. It is an absolute, utter piece of ludicrousness that I don't even entertain for a minute. So, Rome gradually emerged, and down through all the resurrections of that period of time, down to Jesus' day, when the Nero Caesars were still in charge, were in charge in Rome. It was later on, when it was supposed to be a Christian empire, called the Holy Roman Empire, with all of its resurrections and of its decline. He shall enter into the glorious land, verse 41. No description can satisfy that except Palestine, the nation of Israel today, and Jerusalem. Many countries shall be overthrown. So not just two or three. The word many means more than several. A couple is two, several is three or more. Many is more than several. These shall escape out of his hand, even Edom. That means Turkey. And look at the Turks during two world wars that played both ends against the middle, that remained neutral, that actually shipped pig iron to Krupp's furnaces, that were cooperating with the Nazis during World War II to build the Berlin to Baghdad railway and the Iron Bridge over the Bosporus Dardanelles, which I don't think ever came to fruition. But they have been very undependable as an ally to the West, to Britain and the United States, even though today they are a partner in NATO. and they are allowing Americans to fly from Turkish bases in the northern no-flight zone in Iraq. So Edom and Moab, and that probably means both Turkey and Iraq, and the chief of the children of Ammon, the Hashemites, the capital of Ammon, as you know, is Jordan. He shall stretch, they would escape. Why? Well, because these Arabic areas to the east of the Jordan River and Israel are exempt somehow. But it's strange, isn't it? Egypt has signed a peace treaty with Israel, and the other nations basically have not. So they are very much still in a state of war. They have never signed a peace treaty, and the state of war that existed from 1967 onward between all of those other Arab states is still in effect as far as their documents are concerned. And they have never signed a peace treaty or said, well, it's peace, or we call a halt to any kind of military activity. He, this king of the north, shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, plural, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. If you look at the fact that Egypt is at least in a peace treaty with Israel, and that Israel is to be occupied, and so is Egypt, it makes you wonder if Egypt isn't the primary person who does the pushing, and therefore there are two reasons for the occupation of these two different countries. In the first instance, Israel, the reason for the occupation is to preserve the last Jew alive, lest not a single Jew would remain alive in Israel. And the reason for coming like a lightning blitzkrieg avalanche into Egypt is to punish the king of the south, whoever he might be, for this pushing at the king of the north. Now, in our climate today, pushing at, how do you understand that language? I've always taken that to mean something just short of war. I may be wrong. That's my speculation. That is not dogma. That's not an interpretation of biblical prophecy. But knowing that already OPEC in 1973, following the Yom Kippur War, imposed an immediate oil embargo upon the West, and remembering those long lines when I asked Bill Evans to go at 7 o'clock and wait half of the day to fill my gas tank, knowing what is happening right now in the energy crunch in the United States, knowing that they're saying that in California, they're going to begin paying tenfold, 1,000% more for natural gas and other various fossil fuels, knowing that people across the country are going to be paying more than double for the fuel today because it is stupid, short-sighted people in this country, tree huggers, some of whom have connections directly to paganism. And if you look up their websites, paganism does not merely mean ancient people in Babylon, Sumeria, and Akkad who looked at Vishnu or Isis and Osiris. It means people who worship Mother Earth. It means literally people who revere the winter solstice rather than Christ Mass, and people who look at the Saturnalia and the Brumalia as some of their major festivals per year, and they are the last word in environmentalists. They believe that little pocket mice should not interfere, that the military should not interfere with little pocket mice in their desperate need for training areas out in California and elsewhere. They have caused the loss of many huge million-dollar mansions in the northern part of Los Angeles up above Malibu because people were not able to cut down the manzanita and the brush even right next to their walkway and their back porch because of a little kangaroo rat. They are the same people who, because of a spotted owl or a particular kind of a toad or a frog in certain places around the world, will cause the military not to be able to train to meet a national emergency should it occur because they want these various little animals that they believe are far more important. Now, God allowed the destruction of the dinosaurs. If the tree huggers are around today, you might not see them asking, please let's, you know, not cause any interference with Tyrannosaurus Rex. I don't know that that is true. They may be desperately trying to keep all the dinosaurs alive, even if they are eating their children. It just depends on how stupid some of them are. But it actually caused the government itself to back away from having an energy policy because of migratory patterns of caribou in the northern part, just up by the Brooks Range in Alaska, where we have plenty of oil. We've got plenty of fossil fuels. We are one of the richest countries in the world in terms of oil and coal, but we're not taking it out of the ground because of the tree huggers and some of those who have direct connections to a kind of a mystic paganism. People have told me that if Mr. Al Gore could have had his way, he would have eventually banished the internal combustion engine. That would be exactly where they were headed. They wanted to go in the direction of where you're all running around on a little solar-powered little thing, or maybe pedaling your bicycle 72 miles to visit grandma. And so there, well, I'm just getting off of my subject a little bit here, but you got to understand that the reason we are so utterly dependent is because we have not been allowed, through the correct kind of an energy policy, to not only become self-sufficient in oil, which we should be, so we are not beholden to these Islamic Arabs over there, but even an oil exporter, which we could be, to be earning tremendous revenue for our government instead of the other way around. We are not leaving all of that oil in the ground because we are forced to by some power other than special interests and environmentalists and the various groups that agitate in Washington and bring about legislation which prevents us from taking the wealth that God has planted in the soil for our benefit. Now let me just daunt, you know, and just throw cold water all over some people's ideas out here. 300 million Americans are not going in the next couple of decades or so to become millionaires with three homes apiece, with an RV, an SUV, an airplane, a helicopter, a Jeep, with a winter lodge in Hawaii, with all kinds of leisure time. We are just not going to eventually get all the so-called impoverished, the poor, the disenfranchised, and all these minorities and all these other people, including illegal immigrants, to go live in a giant mansion in spite of the fact that that's what they scream for and that's what they all want. And a lot of people will vote for a person because government basically gives them that so-called American dream. They would love to have wealth, just boundless wealth, but no work connected with it. No sweat, blood, and tears, no sacrifice, just have it handed to them on a silver platter. And if you can convince all these people that the white males in the United States, and that is not a racist statement, that's what's happening out here, folks. It is not anything at all to play a so-called race card. I'm telling you that there are attacks upon the Constitution, upon the First and the Second Amendment, attacks upon the American home and the American family, attacks upon American women, normal women, housekeepers, mothers and wives, attacks upon white males. It is not chic. It is not politically correct to be one of these people anymore. I would not deviate, and the word deviate would be chosen deliberately, to tell you an interesting story I heard a while ago about one very vicious person who was really on the bandwagon condemning me about 4, 5, 6 years ago and all of that, but that'll find its way through the corridors of and the halls of gossip sooner or later, I imagine. Anyway, it is interesting to see that we are right now more vulnerable to the Arabs than we were in 1973. And that a push at Europe and or the United States could come in the form of simply shutting off the flow of oil to our country. Look what happens when spikes in the price occur. See, if you'd have been smart, and you weren't and I wasn't, I didn't know, about 3 years ago, if you'd have sold everything you own, maybe including everything except one suit of clothes, and bought oil stocks, you would be very wealthy today. But we didn't see that. We didn't know that. And I don't think people in God's church have the money to invest in the first place. I know I don't. And I don't think we play the stock market. I certainly don't do that either. Don't have any money to play with. So, you know, if you do, when was it when Walmart many, many years ago went down to about 19? And if you'd have done that and seen that and been able to buy it and then stuck with it till it went way on up there, well, you'd have just made an absolute fortune. Well, that just illustrates the point. You all know what it costs at the pump, and you know the average price is now somewhere around $1.50. Lately, it's been around $1.30 here in the Tyler area, but we're one of the lowest areas in this country, and it's way up there in Chicago and out in the West Coast and other places. And, of course, this winter is going to be, and I said that during the summer, you know about La Nina and El Nino, and that's another sermon, another subject. But you know that the weather is really upset, that there is a gradual warming trend. And that's not political. That's ecological. That's environmental, apart from being politicized. It just happens to be a fact. And the weather is upset. And this horrible, long, hot summer, with approximately 6 weeks of 100 degrees plus here in Texas, is probably going to be followed, I said right then, by a very cold winter. Well, look out. Here comes another ice storm on Monday. We already had one that actually stripped millions of trees and put us out of power here, a lot of people, over in Louisiana for the better part of a week. And that was almost unprecedented in East Texas since I've lived here in the last 22 years. So it is happening. Now, we are beholden and dependent upon Arab oil, and so is Europe. So is Japan. The whole world is dependent upon quixotic people who can react based upon emotion and religious fervor and anger and jealousy rather than their own self-interests. And it seems to me to fit perfectly into these biblical prophecies. Now, let me just portray for you a scenario that was actually proposed by the Jerusalem Post. Let's suppose that in the ongoing violence over there, the Arabs would succeed in blowing up a bus filled with Israeli children, or perhaps blowing up an Israeli school. Let's suppose that if the Israelis attacked in retaliation with helicopter gunships or with artillery, that a shell or a rocket went into a Palestinian school, and the so-called collateral damage meant that about 30, 40, 50 Palestinian children were killed. What do you think would happen? Well, the Hezbollah immediately, because they are among the most fanatical and outraged, believing in jihad, would come boiling across the border in the northern Israel from Lebanon. The Syrians support them, and the Iranians provide them with the arms, and so does Saddam Hussein. There have been regular commercial flights going, this has been revealed, from Baghdad to Damascus, and carried in the cargo bay, just as extra baggage, are the Katyusha rockets and the anti-tank rockets that are being fed into the hand of the Hezbollah that has built 30 additional bases along the border of southern Lebanon. At the very same time, the columns of tanks come crunching across Jordan that hasn't got anything to stop them, and across the real shallow little Jordan River up into the West Bank in Israel from the Iraqis. At the very same time, all of the rest of them jump into it. Saudi Arabia, the Persian Gulf sheikdoms, and of course, maybe even the Egyptians, because the Egyptians are not going to hold back. It could actually mean the launching of chemical or biological or even nuclear weapons. And if, I told you this before, if Saddam Hussein, he apparently had the technology, but I understood it from one report that I read, the forward battlefield commanders in Iraq during the Gulf War in 1992 refused to put the nose cones on the scuds that contained chemical or biological weapons. But you heard about the explosion of the great bunker in a forward area in Kuwait or in southern Iraq, and you heard about the Gulf syndrome, and you know that many people over there, apparently because of fallout from the air, when those huge shells exploded and there was a gigantic explosion, that the people that were there that saw it said that it lit up, even though during the day, just like the brightness of the sun right there, a gigantic explosion of a secondary explosion as a result of an attack against a forward ammunition bunker, and residue was found in the shards of those exploding shells and so on of chemical and biological weapons. So they were there. I made the statement, and it's accurate, that had they contained that and the specter of Jews being gassed had occurred, that the Israeli Air Force was already in the air. I told Mark and my wife, I went up and slapped, I'll never forget that, the mantle over the fireplace when I heard the Scuds were landing on Tel Aviv that night. I said, the Israeli IDF is in the air and they're going to bomb Baghdad with nuclear weapons. And they were, and that's what they were going to do. But a frantic call from George Bush, George W.'s father, to Israel, promising them immediately that they would divert all of our aircraft that were bombing the Republican Guard to scud hunting in the western desert, trying to find those scuds and take them out, and that we would immediately ship from forward NATO bases and the United States the Patriot missiles that were supposed to take them out by intercepting them as they were incoming, they said, all right, we'll hold off. But it was by that narrow a margin that we did not see from the first time in 1945 the use of nuclear weapons of the 10 kiloton range on Damascus or on Baghdad. It could have happened, and it was underway. It was about to happen. Now, given that scenario, believe it or not, a much wider war could develop in the Middle East practically at any time. And it could happen without any of the protagonists really wanting it to. I don't think any of those Arabs, if they ever are in their right mind over there in the leadership, really want a major war with Israel. Because they know that Israel is nuclear armed. And they know, even if Americans don't, that nuclear submarines with nuclear weapons are aboard, prowling, as we talk about it today, in the eastern Mediterranean, offshore Turkey, and offshore Lebanon, in a very short range to lob those missiles into Damascus and Syria. They know that. You see, the private warning that went out was through back channels and was not really known until long after it had happened. And essentially, the Israeli IDF told the Syrians, you'd better control the Hezbollah and don't let them attack northern Israel, or you may not exist anymore. We may take out all of Damascus. Well, that's where we are. Now, I want to tell you something is going to happen very shortly. After January 20th, there's a young man, as I told you before, and I'd forgotten to mention that Becky here has actually met him and had her picture taken with him, George W. Bush. And so now I know two people who know the incoming president of the United States. I'd forgotten all about that when I mentioned last time my friend and neighbor out there who had actually played cards with a guy who's going to be, who is already the president-elect. He's going to turn ashen gray. His heart is going to be pounding a little wildly. He's not going to sleep real well after his first briefing, because at this moment he is not in possession of all our national secrets. But with his many, many long, long briefings, along with Condoleezza Rice, and she doesn't know either, but she's going to find out. And they're going to have their baptism of fire when the CIA and the FBI and the NSC and the Naval Intelligence people and all the other intelligence communities, maybe even some you don't even know about, will be briefing them on everything that is going on in the Middle East, in Korea, in Central Europe, in Germany, between the British, everybody else, and a gargantuan weight of responsibility is going to descend upon that man's shoulders such as he never imagined he would inherit. And he is going to grow up in about 24 hours and realize the world is not safe and the world is not any rosy, wonderful place out there, and that we are in great jeopardy. And a lot of it will be as a result of things that were allowed to occur in the last 8 years under the previous administration, with people who were over here stealing our secrets, with Chinese, even generals high in their army in civilian clothes who slept in the Lincoln bedroom, with tremendous amounts of money from the Chinese government being funneled back channel into the re-election of President Clinton, with all kinds of secrets being given now through not the normal channels where you would think it would come and be actually monitored by our security, but through the Commerce Department, through American corporations that have super sophisticated guidance systems. And it was all so innocent, the Chinese are putting communications and telephone satellites up into synchronous orbit. And they need the guidance on these missiles to make sure they can park them up there so they orbit the same way the world does around the sun. And so our corporations that produce that kind of thing were allowed to go around the normal channels by the Clinton administration and to do it under the guise of a simple commercial deal of American big business doing business with the Chinese, in the naive, stupid assumption that that kind of high-tech computer chips that are guidance systems for missiles would not be used for a military purpose. Now we find out that, with the exception of the possibility of Miami, every other major city in the United States is targeted, as is Dallas and Fort Worth, by Chinese intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear warheads. We think the Cold War is over. We think we are the only superpower. And we can think again, because neither is true. There is still a Cold War going on. Russia is still spying on the United States. Russian submarines are still prowling the Gulf and the Atlantic and all the oceans. And they are what are called boomers because they have aboard huge ICBMs, actually IRBMs, I should say, intermediate range continental ballistic missiles that are there, and they are nuclear tipped, and they have multi independently targetable reentry vehicles, MIRV for short, that are aboard those submarines, and they are also there in case they are needed against the United States, because the Russians don't trust us, and we really don't trust the Russians, for all that is said on the surface. This is the world we live in right now today. Now, what is your position, and what are you supposed to be able to do about it? Anything at all? Well, there's not much you can do as a person. But, you know, on the other hand, Jesus Christ of Nazareth foretold every one of these things and said that the world would be like this just before what he called the Great Tribulation broke out on the earth, a time of world trouble, global trouble, such as has never occurred before in the history of all of the world. I don't think we in God's work have the time to amass fortunes of, like, before I left the Worldwide Church, about $165 million a year of operating budget, and it was obscene to only be spending $6 million of that, by the way, on media, when for years I'd advocated owning our own television stations. Way before anybody heard of Pat Robertson, I was urging that we actually have our own television network. I was urging that we got our own uplink to the satellites. I was urging that we put them in place, and I was bombed out and put down every single time I tried it. But nevertheless, be that as it may, and that's a historical fact, perhaps some other things will happen between now and the next 4 years. I find the year 2004 fascinating, not only for American political future, not only for what might happen in the next elections, but also for other reasons. And I wonder about whether or not it is going to be a signal year. I know, for example, that we are now entering the new millennium the way we count in our corrupt calendar, the Gregorian calendar, that actually, as of December 31st at midnight, the way man keeps time by his clocks and our flawed calendar, that we're beginning the next millennium. But I have wondered for quite some time about what might happen, whether we got another 4 years. I told you before that if George W. Bush were elected, I think it means that we have a little more time, that we may have a respite. There may be a temporary turnaround, or at least slowing down the toboggan slide into nihilism. And if you understand nihilism, it means the rejection of all law and order and of all kind of constraints. And together with hedonism, which means just a mindless pleasure binge, just seeking for nothing but pleasure. And that's exactly what all of the leftist liberals seem to want in this country. That now that we're seeing men and women being put in positions of country who, though you may not agree with them doctrinally, and I don't, and though they may not know the truth of God the way it has been revealed to me, and they don't, they're nevertheless people who believe in God. And they believe in, so far as they understand it, the Bible. And they're not afraid to mention God and the Bible. And so maybe with what the Supreme Court did back in 1974, erasing over 170 years of American tradition, American history, the beliefs and the activities, the written and spoken word of over 35 presidents, they said without any precedent, without citing a single bit of case history, in their decision, they said that prayer in schools is, quote, unconstitutional, end quote. Therefore, they looked for all the world like a West Palm Beach vote counter. They were holding up to see if any light shone through the Constitution itself. They were trying to determine whether the framers of the Constitution intended when they, as Jefferson later on wrote in a letter, and I gave you that last Sabbath, built a so-called wall of separation between church and state, really meant to imply that you should never allow the name of God, addressing God, praying to God, or any mention of the Bible or the Ten Commandments in America's schools. When, as I told you last week, in actuality, any eighth grader should be able to see that what Jefferson's letters said to the Baptists in Danbury, Connecticut, when the Congregationalists were persecuting the Baptists and they appealed to the President of the United States, and he wrote them a letter, and he said that was why in the First Amendment that the framers, and he was one of them, of course, who actually authored it, intended, so he must have known what he was saying, to build a wall of separation between church and state. Why? Because up in Plymouth and in Salem, the Puritans had gotten a hold of the religion, and they were imposing their religion. There were people put in public stocks. There were people who were whipped publicly. There were witches that were burnt alive. Some of those colonies, if you think for 1 minute that all of our forefathers came over here to have religious liberty, you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. They came over here to impose their own kind of religion, exchanging one for another. And the Congregationalists were in charge in Connecticut, and they were persecuting the Baptists. So to prevent this state having a religion and another state having a religion, not the state meaning the entire 13 colonies or the entire original nation, but a state from imposing a state religion on its citizens, they built what was called a wall of separation between church and state in the First Amendment. But that was to wall government out of imposing government religion upon the people. It was not to wall religion out of the government. But they have interpreted it in the Supreme Court with no excuse at all from case law or history of saying it was, quote, unconstitutional. So they just made up their mind. They said that. So there. No case law quoted, and since that time, it has been law. I make the point in an article I just finished, a brochure that I'll be sending you, entitled Why Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and Lincoln Could Never Be Elected as a President Today. And I prove why that could never happen in that brochure. And it is, I think, profound because it shows what those men believed and that they did believe in the Creator and made mention of Him not only, as I read to you, in the Declaration of Independence, but frequently in their letters and their statements, and that these men knew and understood there is a God and that all the choice, blessings, and benefits that we have enjoyed in this country came from Almighty God and not from any goodness of our own. So the Supreme Court is found, I say, in that article, to be in contempt of the higher court of heaven. And soon that judgment will be handed down, and we will find that, in fact, instead of interpreting the law, instead of interpreting the written legislation, instead of sticking with the precedent, that which went before in written statutes, they were resting, distorting, twisting the intent of the Founding Fathers and rewriting the law, just the way that Democrat active court tried to do in the Supreme Court in Florida. To rewrite the legislature of Florida is what they tried to do. And of course, they got rebuffed for that. As you know, that was quite a lesson there in government, wasn't it? But nevertheless, now the very same people who just rejoiced over Roe v. Wade, the very same people who loved the idea of partial birth abortion, nice way to say the murder of a little baby whose head has been born, the people who love every leftist liberal thing that has happened in this country, same-sex marriages, gays in the military, why doesn't George W. appoint a gay to the cabinet? They've already said. They won't. If you really want to reach out, why doesn't he just wear a shower cap and go around snapping it every time he gets angry? Yeah, oh, man. Drives me crazy sometimes. The leftist liberals want George W. to govern from the center. That means move toward us. That means give up every one of your conservative values. It means prove that you're a good guy, that you're gracious in victory. You didn't deserve it. You didn't really win it. Our guy did. And so what you need to do is to appoint a gay to your cabinet and prove that you love all of us. The very same people who love the Supreme Court from the days of Warren till just the other day now hate it. Does the word hypocrisy find its way into your mind about this time? These same liberals who hailed all these horrible liberal decisions hated it when the Supreme Court went against what they wanted. Like spoiled kids kicking on the floor, throwing a tantrum, the leftist liberals don't like the court when it rules against what they want. But they love it when it goes the way they want it to. Here is where our nation is today. Well, how much time have we got to do God's work? I don't know. But I do know this, we don't have time to build a vast college. I don't have time to get 18-year-olds in here and train them to be the kind of ministers they ought to be, and to train them that we don't go along with this business of Hitlerian dictatorship in the ministry anymore, and that ministers are to not go around putting you out, that they're to be helpers of your joy and not dictators over your conscience. I don't have time to teach a lot of people that. They've got to come from the grassroots. They've got to come out from among the lay membership as they have in the Intercontinental Church of God. I believe this about what could happen, and I'll conclude this by just saying, here's what I think could take place. If God grants us great miraculous miracles, if suddenly people who are truly near death, terribly crippled, blind, deaf, whatever, were to suddenly be healed, That would get notoriety and would get you on the major talk shows and would get you interviewed by the likes of Larry King Live and on real quickly without it costing you a dime. Hundreds of millions of dollars worth of exposure to say what you need to say to the American people without it costing God's tithe payers a dime. That could happen, couldn't it? That could happen. A huge windfall. Someone who is a multimillionaire who suddenly decides to help out the work of God, and suddenly we're able to buy massive amounts of television time. That could make quite an impact. You know what kind of facilities we're doing this out of? It was interesting because a very fine, wonderful man wrote me recently and he wanted to direct this one thing he was talking about to my literature department. I thought, well, that's fine. I'll email my son Matthew and tell him about that. And then I imagine a lot of people that watch television and think, oh, that's a nice looking set. I think it is too. It's in my study at home with a little portion of my fireplace visible. And if they just pan the camera around, they see all my heads on the wall and that our furniture has been all torn up. My little desk has been moved from the living room into the study and back again. They'd see a bunch of old quilts and blankets over my windows. They would see a little red piece of cellophane over a lamp that is shining on that rock to give a little bit of color. And if they could see beneath the desk, they would see me sitting there in old jeans and jodhpurs with a jacket and a tie on this part. My most comfortable old rundown shoes and a pair of Levi's, maybe, and I'm there doing a television program. And they would see behind the camera my son Mark. And they would see going down to the post office box and getting huge trays of mail and taking them to his home, my son David, and working away sometimes into the wee hours, tabulating, calculating, putting every single name and the amount of donations into a computer databank. They would see a little suite of two office buildings down here with Gene and Wilma and some other people. I can't name them all because we even have a couple of new ones in there that don't know, we've hired. With a small little office staff doing all of this work. They'd see my son Matthew laboring as he did last night a little bit and got that, no, the night before and got me the newspaper so that I was proofreading it this morning together with that other article I was doing. And he lays out the newspaper in his home on his computer. And then he runs it up to the Gladewater Mirror. We don't have our own printing plant. We don't have a great big pre-press department. We don't have a great big graphics art department. We got one of my sons who is deaf with a computer with all the software and the programs that he can produce any kind of literature that anybody else can. That's what we have. And I was telling my wife, do you realize how not only has God placed a huge responsibility, but how much he has blessed this family? So when I say that if my dad came out of the grave and walked around today, he would be astonished about what had happened to the worldwide church. He wouldn't be a bit surprised about Germany or Europe or the Middle East, nor would he be a bit surprised to find out that his son and his grandchildren are carrying on the work that God called him to clear back in 1934.